And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your front range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It's Friday, October 12th. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, the U.S. Supreme Court is currently wrestling with a case that will determine how long immigration officials have to detain someone living in the country illegally after a criminal detention. A CU law professor will tell us about the case and share the story of a young man from Longmont that, due to the ambiguity in the language, was detained and deported over a decade after a drug charge that he'd long put behind him. The term local product means different things to different people, and in turn, in Colorado, the term local is loosely defined on purpose. More on that coming up in the program. We'll also get a report from EcoCycle that looks at recycling of electronics. That's part of our Zero Waste series that we're doing with EcoCycle. So if you have questions about how to recycle some of those electronics, do tune in for that. At 8:30 on Connections, KGNU's Duncan Campbell is joined by Rex Weiler. He's co-founder of Greenpeace. They'll be discussing international perspectives on the rise of autocratic corporate rule and the acceleration of climate change. As always, on Connections, your calls will be invited. That's coming up at 8:30. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. There may be some issues we're seeing with the blue books you may have received in the mail. For more, here's Steve Miller.
The Colorado Voter Information Guide, or the Blue Book, has been sent out to registered voters, but there's a bit of a problem. It appears that the Blue Book is incomplete or missing pages. The Colorado Legislative Council, who is responsible for writing and mailing out the Blue Book, says that the booklet did go out incorrectly. The books are written to be an impartial analysis of each new measure, explaining both sides of the issue. Voters in different locations have reported the pages missing key information on several ballot issues, and some appear to be missing entire sections. A grassroots campaign is now calling for an investigation with the Joint Legislative Committee about the missing pages. Those looking for a new Blue Book can email their address to bluebook.ga@state.co.us or call 303-866-3521. Also, all county clerk offices in Colorado have copies available for the public. This is Steve Miller for KGNU.
RTD is threatening to terminate its contract with a rail construction company after ongoing G-Line delays. Emily Arbery has more.
The Regional Transport District signed a contract with Denver Transit Partners in 2010 for the construction of three commuter rails leading to the Denver Union Station, the A-Line to the airport, the B-Line to Westminster, and the G-Line to Arvada and Wheat Ridge. All three should have been fully operational by June 2nd. However, 5 months later, the G-Line remains closed due to software complications with crossing gates. Last month, DTP filed a lawsuit against RTD, arguing that it should be reimbursed for the tens of millions of dollars it has spent on crossing gate attendants who were required to stand duty while the software issues at the crossings were addressed. The Denver Post reports that in response, RTD sent a notice to DTP on Tuesday warning the transit agency that it has 30 days to remedy the breaches or 20 days to propose a remedial plan to cure the breaches it claims led to the delays. In other transit news, the Boulder Daily Camera reports that the Boulder downtown bus station is currently over capacity. More than 3,800 people stream to the station on a typical weekday, taking an average of 1,200 bus trips in and out of town, which is more bus trips than serviced at Denver's Union Station. The station has proved to be too small for the traffic it's attracting, as buses often sit waiting to park and let off passengers. To address the issues at the Boulder station, Natalie Stifler, senior transportation planner for the city, told the Daily Camera that there are plans to temporarily expand into 14th Street south of Canyon Boulevard to increase from 13 bus gates to 18. However, the city anticipates demand for public transportation to rise over the next 10 to 15 years and recognizes that a permanent solution to relocation is necessary. For KGNU, I'm Emily Ambori.
Republican candidates in Colorado are being targeted by gun control activists just weeks ahead of the midterm elections. Mabel Sanders has more.
Gun control continues to be a big political issue in the upcoming midterm elections, with activists targeting Colorado's 6th congressional district. Republican Representative Mike Kaufman has shown his support of the Second Amendment through his involvement with the NRAPAC. Jason Crow, Kaufman's Democratic challenger in CD6, has focused his campaign on gun safety. Likewise, in the governor's race, Jared Polis has promised to take on the NRA, whereas his opponent, Republican Treasurer Walker Stapleton, has voiced his plan to repeal gun safety laws in Colorado. This Saturday, members of different gun control activist groups will rally in Aurora at the Aurora Active Adult Center at 9:15 to show support for Polis and Crow. Featured groups include the Colorado State Chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, a part of Everytown for Gun Safety. They will be joined with gun violence survivors and students. For KGNU, I'm Mabel Sanders.
And you can expect a high today somewhere around 58 degrees, low tonight somewhere around 40. We do have sunny skies on the forecast today and tomorrow. However, on Sunday, there is a very good chance for some snow, and the high will only be somewhere around 23 degrees. Sun returns on Monday and Tuesday, with temperatures warming up to around 50 by Tuesday. It's currently around 36 degrees on the Front Range. And you are listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. If this kind of local independent community news is something you tune into on Friday mornings or on any weekday morning, do give us a call here and pledge your support at 303-449-4885. Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court began hearing arguments in the Nielsen v. Priap case that will decide how long immigration officials have to detain someone living in the country illegally after they are criminally detained. I spoke with Violetta Chapin, a CU Boulder law professor who teaches Colorado Law's Criminal and Immigration Defense Clinic. She told me about the case, as well as about the story of one Longmont individual who has been directly affected by this loose legal language as it relates to picking someone up after they have been criminally detained. Here's Violetta Chapin.
So the case is about a 1996 federal law that states that certain immigrants or non-citizens here in the United States can be detained by immigration authorities if they've been convicted of certain crimes that would make them inadmissible to the United States. The question is when they are detained. The law itself states that immigration authorities must detain the non-citizen when released from custody in the criminal case. And all of the argument about it concerns the meaning of the word when. The litigants, the people for the plaintiffs, for the immigrants, are stating when released means when they're released, and there should be prompt action by immigration authorities after the person is released from custody if they're really interested in them. What unfortunately has happened to a number of the litigants in the case is that they were convicted of a certain crime many, many years ago. Immigration authorities never picked them up. They then returned to their communities. They built lives. They, you know, by all intents and purposes, were rehabilitated. And many, many years later, sometimes decades later, immigration authorities picked them up and are holding them in detention without bond because of those convictions from many, many years ago, even though there's no information now that these people are a danger or a problem or anything that anybody should be concerned about.
So can you tell us a little bit about how this issue has been handled of immigration detention after criminal detention? How has this been handled historically?
So we've had a few circuits that have said, no way, when released means when released. We're not going to hold them without bond and let the immigrant go, despite immigration authorities saying, no, we should be able to detain them. And then we've had other circuits, like our circuit here in Colorado is the 10th Circuit, which has interpreted when released to mean whenever after the person is detained. So there have been instances here in Colorado where an immigrant or a non-citizen has been detained many, many years after a conviction in a case.
So this is a case the U.S. Supreme Court began wrestling with on Wednesday. Can you tell us a little bit about what was said and what happened there?
So The government, the Department of Homeland Security, is certainly arguing that or asking the Supreme Court to take a very long or wide view of what when released means, even though lawyers for a long time have been talking about what statutory language is, right? So if something is vague, you're supposed to really look at the plain meaning of the statute and how is it that ordinary people would interpret it. And the vast majority of people would interpret the phrase when released to mean when they're released, like very shortly after or immediately upon release. But the government in this case is asking for the Supreme Court to take a very different interpretation of that phrase and say it just means whenever after, even if it's many, many years after. It certainly, from the questions on the bench, shows that our newest justice, Judge Kavanaugh, is definitely taking a hardline approach to this and agrees with the government that they have wide latitude and can detain the immigrant whenever, even if it's many, many years later, and would detain him without bond. Judge Gorsuch, perhaps surprisingly, another Trump appointee, seemed concerned about that and asked if there were any limits on federal power. If this were true, and shouldn't we really be looking at the plain meaning of the statute? So I think it's unclear sort of where this will land. It may be that Justice Roberts and Justice Gorsuch will increasingly become more of these swing votes because the two of them are rightfully concerned about the limits of governmental power. And in this case, this would be a tremendous expansion of the right of the federal government to detain people living within the United States without bond, which we never allow in the criminal side. One of the things that we heard at the argument was that somebody accused of murder can get a bond right here in the United States. But oftentimes these immigrants have been convicted of very, very minor crimes, which just under our immigration laws make them eligible for mandatory detention. So somebody convicted, for example, of possession of marijuana, which is something that's not even illegal anymore in many of our states, would allow our government to lock that person up in a cell without being able to pay a bond or get a bond to be released and fight their case from out of detention.
And you've done work related to this case. You know someone who has been directly affected by this issue and have worked on that issue. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So my students and I in the clinic here at the law school represent non-citizens who are often navigating both the criminal justice system and the immigration system. And we had a client a few years ago now who is a lawful permanent resident or had been a lawful permanent resident here in Colorado or in the United States for over 15 years by the time we met him. He had moved to Longmont when he was in his late teens. And in about 5 years later, he was unfortunately arrested and convicted of possession of cocaine in Jefferson County. He was a lawful permanent resident. That would have made him deportable from the United States. He didn't serve any jail time. He definitely went to court. But because it was his first and only offense, he was just put on probation. He completed his probation successfully. He moved on from that, went to school, went to college. And then was working and had been working for several years in Longmont and an integral part of the community, living with his family. And almost 12 years after that conviction, ICE picked him up and held him without bond at the immigrant detention facility in Aurora. And we made the argument that if ICE cared about him, right, and thought it was a problem, they would have detained him a lot longer. And instead, what they allowed him to do was that they allowed him, obviously, to return to his community, set down roots, build a life, become a contributing member of our society. He's lawfully here, not violating the immigration laws otherwise, and that ICE was the one who was violating the terms of their own statute, which said that if you are going to try to deport him after a conviction, you must detain him when released. And 12 years later does not mean when released. And unfortunately, we were unable to get him out of detention because of the judge in the immigration court here holding that here in the 10th Circuit in Colorado, we do not interpret the phrase when released to mean immediately. And so he was unfortunately in detention for many, many months. We tried everything we could to get him out, and then he was deported away from his family, away from his community, and away from really his home country.
And are there elements to this case that you feel like are being misunderstood or aren't being talked about that maybe we should talk about?
It's worth it for people to understand that immigration law is a civil system, and it is separate and apart from our criminal laws, which have prison and jail as a penalty for a violation of our criminal laws. But even though immigration is a civil system for which the remedy, right, of being here unlawfully in the United States is removal or deportation, it's not prison time, that our immigration laws nonetheless allow for this extraordinary measure and deprivation of human liberty called mandatory detention, and that we can hold non-citizens in detention at enormous social costs to them and their family and enormous financial costs to the taxpayers simply because they have been convicted of a crime that if they were in criminal court would certainly make them eligible for a bond and allow them to be out with their families. And instead, we have chosen to take this extraordinarily harsh measure to deprive them of their liberty. And I think anybody who's concerned about federal power, governmental power, should be very concerned about this.
And that was Violeta Chapin, a CU Boulder law professor who teaches Colorado Law's Criminal and Immigration Defense Clinic. Learned something in that interview that you didn't know about? That we ask you to support that kind of information by giving us a call here and supporting KGNU. The number to call this morning is 303-449-4885. That we bring you those types of interviews here on The Morning Magazine every weekday, keeping you informed with what's happening here locally as well as on the national level, those kind of decisions that are affecting us here locally. So do call in, pledge your support to this type of information that we bring you every weekday here on The Morning Magazine, talking to people in your community. The number to call again, 303-449-4885. And thank you. The term local, when branded on products, means different things to different people. For some, it's about reducing carbon footprint, and for others, it's about supporting a local economy or a local business. Currently, regardless of the term's meaning, there is little doubt that putting local on a product dramatically increases sales. I looked into why the term local is so broad and the pros and cons of making local branding a bit mysterious for consumers. Walk the aisles of any food grocery and you will find item after item labeled as local. But what does a local label really mean?
Well, you would assume within like a 50-mile radius it was produced, but I'm sure it probably isn't.
Grown in the area. It's this whole push for farm to table.
Your money being spent within that local economy is going to be multiplied, increasing jobs within your community.
If the ingredients are from someplace else and it's merely put together here, to me that's not local.
If half of it's made overseas, I mean, you're still reducing it by 50%, the carbon footprint, because half of it's made here.
Yeah. I guess I sort of assume it'll be within the city limits, maybe state limits. I don't know. I've never really given it that much thought, actually.
Even with all the uncertainty surrounding the exact origins of products labeled as local, that local label really makes a difference. The Colorado Department of Agriculture says their surveys show that 90% of Coloradans prefer to buy local brands. And grocery store managers like Evan from Natural Grocers by Vitamin Cottage are noticing the trend.
I've noticed that our regular customers in the store, they prefer local products, products labeled as local.
I spoke with Wendy White, marketing director for the Colorado Department of Agriculture and manager of the Colorado Proud program, to get some more information about the value and methods used for local branding.
Well, I manage the Colorado Proud program, which is a program of the Colorado Department of Agriculture. And in order to become a member of the program, we define a Colorado Proud member or a product as being grown, raised, or processed within the state of Colorado. Every 5 years, we also conduct a survey of Colorado residents to see what they think about not only local products, but Colorado agriculture in general. And the last time that we did our survey, we asked people, you know, when you shop specifically for fruits, vegetables, meats, and dairy products, what does local mean to you? And 69% said that it was produced in Colorado. So that really told us that a lot of people really do identify local as being from within the state.
Does the product have to be entirely from Colorado, or can it be mostly from Colorado, but parts of the ingredients are from somewhere else?
It really depends on the product. For produce, for example, it has to be grown within Colorado in order to qualify for Colorado Proud. Manufactured food products just need to be made here. So we even have coffee roasters that are members of the program. They're roasting the coffee beans here. They're contributing jobs into the state economy, but their ingredients may not be from Colorado. But we have other members such as jams and jellies that are using all local fruit. So it's pretty varied when it comes to the manufactured food products, but we really encourage our members once they join to then tell the story about their product and where they're from. Local has various meanings no matter where you go, which is actually pretty nice because, you know, in parts of Colorado, for example, like the Four Corners or the Durango area, local for them is actually New Mexico. And that's how they may define local and promoting their local producers, as well as Rauch County and the Steamboat Springs area. They might have another definition for local. So it's nice that there isn't a specific definition of local so that it can be used based on different communities' needs. You know, it's just like natural, too. They haven't come up with a clear definition of the term natural either. And because local it is so varied from region to region, state to state, community to community, I'm not sure if they'll ever come up with an official definition of local. So I think it is, you know, up to the consumer to learn a lot about the product and, you know, make their buying decisions on their preferences.
So it seems, at least for now, it's up to consumers to make sure their interpretation of local is the same as the marketers. But store managers like Evan from Natural Grocers by Vitamin Cottage are hopeful that eventually it will be easy for customers to identify what products are made locally and what products are grown locally.
It is loosely defined, and a more strict definition or an actual definition would be very beneficial. I personally believe that the term local needs a specific definition like organic has.
At this point, the only surefire way to guarantee your food is locally grown, if that's what you're looking for, is to start up that backyard garden. And we do want to thank two individuals that have called in to pledge their support to Community Radio this morning. We want to thank Julia Helby. She is a new member and loves Democracy Now! Thank you so much, Julia. We also want to thank Steve, who called in and donated this morning. He loves the independence of KGNU, free from corporate influence. And as we just heard on that last story, keeping you in touch with what's going on in our corporate world. But yes, very much free from the corporate influence here. We also have a brand new donation that just came through as the phones are ringing out in the hallway right now. Daryl called in. He listens every morning and loves the perspective he hears on KGNU. KGNU is that sort of a gem in your community. There is no doubt there are a lot of great things to do in Boulder. There are a lot of unique things about Boulder, and one of those, no doubt, is KGNU. 40 years this year, it's a very, very special opportunity that you have in this community to be able to turn on your radio and have a show like The Morning Magazine bringing your morning news here on KGNU. Do call in and be part of that community. Enrich your community by calling 303-449-4885. We're here for you to keep you in touch with what's happening in your world locally with the voices of the people from your community. But we need you to do that. So do call in 303-449-4885. And now we bring you another bit of information from EcoCycle. This morning we'll be hearing about recycling electronics.
Good morning, Boulder! Today we're going to talk about electronics recycling. Did you know that electronics are the fastest growing segment of the global waste stream? It's not all that surprising, given that the tech industry cranks out new products in the blink of an eye, or so it seems. And if you're an average American, then your household uses about 30 electric products, laptops, mobile phones, cell phones, you name it. And that's according to the Consumer Electronics Association. According to EPA, Americans generated well over 3 million tons of e-waste. And those numbers are from 5 years ago, so I'm going to guess they're even bigger now. But what you may not know is that under Colorado law, disposal of electronics in landfills is illegal and has been since 2013. Colorado and other states want to keep electronics out of landfills where they can leach harmful metals into groundwater and soils. And if you're wondering whether landfills leak, the answer is definitely yes. Nor do we want to see used electronics shipped overseas to unregulated facilities where workers often lack even the most basic safety equipment to prevent exposure to toxic or caustic chemicals. The best way to dispose of electrics responsibly is to bring them to the EcoCycle City of Boulder Center for Hard to Recycle Materials or to another recycler who also has an E-Steward certification. The E-Steward standard is the strictest in the industry and meets the highest data security standards and the highest international standards for protecting both workers and the environment. Remember, recycling saves energy and conserves resources. Recycling 1 million laptops, for example, saves the energy equivalent to the electricity used by close to 4,000 U.S. homes annually, according to EPA, and helps keep toxics out of landfills, as I mentioned earlier. And there's another great reason to recycle your electronics at the EcoCycle-operated charm facility, and that's jobs, local jobs, for young adults on the autism spectrum or who have other disabilities and who happen to excel at dismantling and processing electronics. In fact, their focus on detailed, repetitive work makes them among the best workers in the industry. That's the mission of our partner, Blue Star Recyclers. Blue Star and EcoCycle have been partners since 2016, recycling about 1 million pounds of electronics annually in the Boulder area. Blue Star also has facilities in Denver and Colorado Springs. In fact, it's a perfect match. That's because of the roughly 50 million people in the United States who have a developmental disability. Less than 20% are meaningfully employed, yet most are not working and don't have jobs. And of the estimated 50 million tons of electronic waste generated globally each year, less than 20% is responsibly recycled. Yet at least 95% is recyclable. So whether you're an individual with an outdated phone or a business with dozens of old computers to unload, you can recycle them responsibly at the Charm, located at 6400 Arapahoe Road in Boulder. Please check our website for details and fees. Thanks for listening.
And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hanalee Myers. Now it's time for Connections with KGNU's Duncan Campbell. Stay tuned.